put down that iPhone or BlackBerry, look up from your computer screen or video game, stop texting, emailing, chatting online. It turns out that the internet could be driving us crazy.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
From the cold, remorseless God that brought you the year 2016 comes a brand new level of terror. 2017. If you thought the past year was bad, you ain't seen nothing yet, buddy. Get ready for war, famine, awful new memes, and the untimely death of more of your favorite icons, including Tom Hanks. Plus, the breakout hit series Atlanta is getting canceled, and the highly anticipated iPhone 8 is going to be recalled after they start leaking battery acid right down people's goddamn legs, including yours. It's going to suck bigly. 2017, coming soon to your life, whether you like it or not.
If you've ever gotten a cup of coffee from Starbucks, they've probably misspelled your name. So we did an experiment. Molly is a person working at Super Deluxe with a really easy name. So we had her walk into 5 different Starbuckses and see how the baristas spelled it. Molly, 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 and Mommy, which is not so great. But what if the misspellings on your cup aren't actually mistakes? Think about it. Starbucks is the largest coffee chain in the world, meaning that each year, millions of people all around the globe have their names misspelled on cups of Starbucks coffee. They take pictures of their butchered names and post them on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, wherever. And what do all these pictures have in common? 2 things. A misspelled name. And that familiar green siren, staring at you, with her all-knowing gaze. That's right, sheeple, you've been giving Starbucks free advertising for years. That innocent little scribble on the side of your pumpkin spice latte is tugging at the subconscious of your friends to go out and buy pumpkin spice lattes of their own, only to then have their names misspelled, take a picture, and thereby perpetuate this frothy cycle of control. Okay, hold on a second. Has Starbucks really snuck this under all of our noses? Believe whatever you want. But maybe, just maybe, we're onto something.
I love my job almost as much as I do. As much, but I'm more than make up with an enormous sense of self-worth. My job. My job.
Rabbi Steven Exler, Elijah Wiesel, and Shira Wiesel.
Hello, everybody. First, to wish all of you a happy Hanukkah. I figure we've got to be first because we're about 10 days early. This 2,000-year-old tale never gets old. In every generation, we take heart from the Maccabees' struggle against tyranny, their fight to live in peace and practice their religion in peace. We teach our children that even in our darkest moments, a stubborn flame of hope flickers and miracles are possible. It's easy sometimes to take these fundamental freedoms for granted, but they too are miraculous. They too have to be nurtured and safeguarded. And it's in defense of these ideals, precisely because the Jewish people have known oppression, that throughout our history, this community has been at the forefront of every fight for freedom. And I had the honor to go to Jerusalem earlier this year to bid farewell to my dear friend Shimon Peres and reaffirm the commitment of the United States to the State of Israel. Through centuries of exile and persecution and even the genocide of families like the Wiesels endured, the Hanukkah candles have been kindled. Each wick, an answer to the wicked. Each light, a signal to the world that yours is an inextinguishable faith.
You ain't my bitch, nigga. Buy your own damn fries.
I walk down that lonesome lane, hung down my head and cried. I weeped and I cried under a willow tree, and I feel the deep blue sea. My dead papa can't be found, and my brother on the county road says I done been to that long plank walk, and I'm on my way back home. Beauty calls me to weep, beauty calls me to moan, beauty calls me to leave my home. they called me to weep, you they called me to moan, you they called me to leave my home. I got no money, and they called me no honey, I have to weep and moan. And 1800 in that 99, he got killed on that streetcar line. They took him down that smoke, he rode, brought him back on that two-lane bone. Says I turned down to that water's edge, as far as I care to go. Said, run here, mama, and fall in your daddy's breast. These blues gonna let me rest. Your fast mail train coming round, he cut you, done killed my little brown, he dead. Oh, hey, was found in that drive a week, and a body had never been seen.
Here with our trends expert, Carol Logan, and we're talking about a really interesting new ad campaign from Applebee's, which is encouraging customers to visit the restaurant ironically. Good morning, Carol. Good
Hi.
To see you again. Tell me about this ad campaign. It seems very cutting edge.
Well, it is. That's exactly it. They're designed to attract young people to Applebee's by inviting them to ridicule its food, service, and atmosphere. Here, take a look.
What do you guys want to do?
We could go to Applebee's.
No, let's seriously go to Applebee's.
Okay.
Look, guys, it's grilled.
It's just like my neighborhood restaurant, only completely geographically non-specific.
Yeah, nothing like a wild time at Applebee's, right?
Applebee's. Wouldn't it be funny to go to Applebee's?
I like it.
Isn't that persuasive?
Yeah.
But, you know, they're not resting on their laurels. They're adding new menu items designed to be ridiculed outright, like the fajita cordon bleu and the chicken strip explosion.
Those sound ridiculous.
I know. But, you know, so far this has been so successful that Applebee's is actually prepping a second series of ads aimed at customers who enjoy making fun of annoying young people who do things ironically.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Let me make fun of your business model for my condescending amusement.
Yes, I know who the latest bands are, so I'm too cool to just eat a cheeseburger without making fun of you.
Thank you.
All right, well, Carol, thanks so much for being here, and not a lot of people know this, but Carol's my next door neighbor.
That's how I got the job.
Yes, it is.
So he disappears from Greenwich, Connecticut, and he reappears in New York City, 1992, and where does he go? Where did John List go when he had to start all over in a new town?
The church.
Church. Church.
Church.
You show, say it with me, church.
Church.
You show up at church.
Whoa.
With your song and dance.
Yeah.
And you have a built-in community of people who are going to trust you.
Totally.
Keep your eyes peeled, churchies. So he rolls up. This is now when he is
because people church.
In a somewhat colorful spectacle, hundreds of clowns marched through Mexico City to thank the Virgin of Guadalupe. The tradition, now in its 26th year, sees the professionals dress in colorful wigs, costumes, and face paint and march through the city. The parade is a way of showing thanks to the Virgin for protecting the profession and providing work for the clowns.
Bueno, pues venimos a dar gracias a la Virgencita por nuestra chamba, que nos mantiene en salud. Y bueno, pues eso es lo que venimos a dar gracias, más que nada por la salud y la chamba que nos da este, pues todo el año, ¿verdad?
The pilgrimage started in 1991 and shows no sign of slowing down. Carrying makeshift altars with images of the Virgin, the procession ends with Mass inside the Basilica. The dedication and effort made by participants shows that despite the outfits, there's no clowning around here.
Keep your eyes peeled, churchies.
I define wilding out as just getting crazy, like doing whatever you want to do. It could be good energy, it could be bad energy, you could cuss somebody out. Do you mind if I wild out on the person at the drive-thru that don't want to give you the barbecue sauce? But you should always be polite and ask, do you mind? Well, the You Mind If I Wild Out video came about because I needed some promotions for my song called Throw It. Bend that ass over, put your hands on the ground, and throw it like a Pokeball, catching all the Pokemon. Throw it, just throw it. So I hit up my friend, this guy. And he's sitting here, and he's chilling. This is the drug dealer.
What's up, homie? You holding down the block, huh?
What's up, bro? What you need?
I don't need nothing right now. You heard me? I want you to check some out. Come here, let me holler at you.
We was like, okay, you're gonna, you know, first when we cut on the music, I'm gonna pull up to you and be like,
you heard that new Fly in Red?
Run this, bro.
He was like, then I'ma just start acting like a dude and like acting thugged out or whatever. And so he's like, hey. And that's the line. He bends over and starts twerking his ass like this. I put it on my Instagram first. We went to sleep, and by the time we woke up, it like had like a million and something views on this side, on that side. I tried to make it into a wild out challenge. Like I wanted everybody to be doing it. I mean, I started seeing people using their own songs, people trying to promote their music. They had this one dude that was like, you mind if I praise God?
Man, look at this dude over here praising God, man. Hey, what's up? Hey, let me holler at you, my man.
I was scrolling down Twitter and I just saw the video and I was like, that's funny. People just was like trying to remake it and I was like, I'm gonna be different and I'm gonna turn this into something with God. You can't go wrong with God.
You heard that new Kurt Franklin? Verses 16 and 17. Yes, sir. You heard that new Kurt Franklin?
Kurt Franklin has some hits. Every
tear from the nah, go ahead. What do you think? Ready? For the revolution. Come on.
Notifications, sometimes it makes my phone freeze. It got like 500 retweets in like 3 minutes. So when it unfroze, I had about like 9,000 retweets. Yeah, I would say it was some of my best dance moves ever.
Everybody just took it and did their own thing with it. And at first I was kind of like bothered, but imitation is the best form of flattery, right? So I Google myself a lot because people's always putting shit about me on the internet. They have my name fake, like in the Wikipedia, like who is Franklin Randall? I don't know who that guy is. My name is Jeff. Coming in my DMs like, yo, what's up? Like, I want to know the real Franklin. I want to get to know him. I don't even know that again.
Twitter definitely needs to give me a verified check. I reached out and asked for a verified check and they told me it was not qualified. Y'all gonna regret it.
And like, this isn't even like the first time I ever really went viral. You know what I'm saying? I'm pretty popular guy when it comes to throwing boy pieces.
Yeah. Throw that boy. Yeah, you got me looking. Yeah. Thinking about me.
And you know, that's what kind of started my career.
Before the Y'all Mind If I Praise God video, I actually made a dance called a Dolphin, which went viral. I'm flexing and I'm jigging, throwing jiggins in the coffin. I'm flexing and I'm jigging, going around and hit that dolphin. If you ever saw a dolphin jumping out the water, that's what you're doing with your body.
I made a video to promote a song, and the video that I made to promote the song took off on its own, so now I'm making a song to promote the video to promote the song. It's like a big circle.
Do you mind if I wild out? No Nick Cannon, I go bananas on two perks and a half a Zanny, sip codeine and pineapple.
I said, wild out.
This is how I wild out, you know what I'm saying? That's my dance. If y'all wanna do that dance, that's cool. You know, you just wild out however you wanna wild out. It's on you.
mind? If I wild out?
It's just so ridiculous!
We all love a gossip. Even those who try their utmost not to tell tales, at some point in their lives will find themselves having a good goss. Those who feel less guilty over talking about people behind their backs will be pleased to know that academics have now said it's actually what sets our species apart. Apparently, gossip is what makes people human, because it allows us to pass on vital information about who to trust and who not to trust. It also helps us bond with family and friends. Professor Robin Dunbar at Oxford University has even said that far from feeling guilty about gossiping, we should accept it as a vital part of human life that might even help us to live longer. He has said the most important thing that will prevent you from dying is the size of your social network, and that this has a bigger effect than anything except giving up smoking. Gossiping is only chatting with people and keeping up to date with the social world in which you live. So, gossip is what makes us human. The use of gossip in a negative sense, though, was not seen until the 18th century. It used to be what you did with your friends. Academics carried out experiments to find out what people thought about gossips themselves. The results were that whilst people distrust those who gossip too much, they are also wary of those who gossip too little. In evolutionary biology, the phenomenon is called the gossip theory, and it suggests that as language developed, it allowed early humans to pass on reliable information so that they could live in ever-increasing groups.
To what is best. I'm sorry, what's going on? Somebody's not feeling good? All right. We can get our doctors back there to help out. Somebody want to go to my doctor's office and just have them?
U.S. President Barack Obama's final press conference of 2016 was interrupted on Friday when a reporter fell ill in the White House briefing room.
Now, can somebody help out, please, and get Doc Jackson in here? Somebody grabbing our doctor?
Thank you, Mr. President, for stopping.
Of course.
This was Obama's last end-of-year press conference as president. He's due to travel to Hawaii with his family for Christmas before handing over the keys to the White House to Donald Trump in January.
You guys know where the doctor's office is? Just go through the palm doors. It's right next to the map room. There he is. All right, there's Doc Jackson. He's all right. Okay.
Yeah. we're feeling what not having hope feels like, you know? Hope is necessary.
Michelle Obama has given her final one-to-one interview as U.S. First Lady as she and her husband prepare to leave the White House. Speaking to Oprah Winfrey, she reflected on the legacy of the Obama administration.
Our children respond to crises the way they see us respond. You know, it's like the toddler that bumps his head on the table and they look up at you to figure out whether it hurts. And if you're like, oh my God, they're crying. But if you're like, you know what, babe, it's okay. It's okay. And I feel that way about the nation. I feel that Barack has been that for the nation in ways that people will come to appreciate. Having a grown-up in the White House who can say to you in times of crisis and turmoil, hey, it's going to be okay. Let's remember the good things that we have. Let's look at the future. Let's look at all the things that we're building. All of this is important for our kids to stay focused and to feel like their work isn't in vain, that their lives aren't in vain. What do we do if we don't have hope, Oprah?
The interview will air in full on CBS on Monday.
It's one of those things that you just sort of think, dang.
Boom!
I just want to take a picture right now.
Why would he do that?
He's a jackass.
One of those things that you just sort of think, dang.
Thousands gather for Rio de Janeiro's 21st annual Gay Pride Parade. The event was held in Copacabana Beach on December 11th. This year's Pride Parade brought attention to the fight to make Brazil's public health system cover the costs of hormonal treatments and sex change operations. Eight large trucks with giant sound systems drove in the parade, and marchers carried a 400-foot-long rainbow flag. A coffin and wreaths were also carried to honor the 300 victims of homophobia killed in Brazil in 2016. Julio Moreira, director of a group called Arco Iris, said that in Brazil, quote, conservative waves seek in every way to prevent achievements and diminish the rights of the LGBT population, misrepresenting concepts and venting untruths. Actions such as the Rio LGBT parade are essential. Police did not disclose the official number of parade participants, but organizers estimate the number was around 600,000. Around 400,000 condoms were distributed to parade goers.
I met this girl.
And she's just great, this girl I just adore. The problem is, she has much more than I had bargained for. She's got that style, she's got that smile, she's got the walk, she's got the talk, she's got that zing. There's just one thing, she's got a penis. She's got that flair, knows what to wear. She's got that face, that girlish grace. She's got pizzazz, too bad she has a penis. Now there's always some failure, always some flaw. Ain't that what they call Murphy's Law? But male genitalia, that's where I draw the line. Besides, hers is bigger than mine. My life's a mess, 'cause under that dress, she's got a P-E-N-I-S. Yes.
I don't care who you are, that's funny right there now. But I should, Lord, I apologize.
Before we get to the point of this video, I need to play you a clip really quick. You may have seen this, but I promise you when I'm done talking, it's going to take on a whole different meaning. This is a report that was put out by NBC in 2007, a prediction on what things would be like in the year 2017.
The year is 2017. You're rushed to a hospital, unconscious with no ID or medical history, but thanks to a microchip under your skin, it's all there. Science fiction 20 years ago, but a biometric reality today.
So what they were talking about here is that by what is now next year, they were talking about everyone being in some form microchipped. And that microchip would be tied to all of your information, your medical information, your financial information, everything about you would be tied to this microchip. And this has been made fun of by people, but it's eerie as hell when you consider that this just happened. It seems that our House is in a race to pass some of the most Orwellian legislation we've ever seen in the history of this country as the clock ticks down on the Obama administration's last little breath. And they are just passing these things with overwhelming majorities that are insane. They're insane. Okay? And this one is perhaps the most insane. In fact, when I saw this headline, no offense to this website, but when I saw the headline, I had to ask myself if it was fake news because I thought, oh, come on, there's no way they actually did that. And I had to actually go myself and look up this bill. This is not an Onion article. This is not Saturday Night Live skit. This actually really did just happen. So this is HR 4919. Which is to reauthorize the Missing Alzheimer's Disease Patient Alert Program and promote initiatives that will reduce the risk of injury and death relating to the wandering characteristics of some children with autism. Now that sounds all good and fine, but this is an Orwellian human tracking program that could quickly and easily get out of control due to the vagueness with which this bill is written. And it mandates that the U.S. Attorney General award grants to law enforcement officials so those agencies can create, establish, and operate locative tracking technology programs. And the mission is to find, quote, individuals with forms of dementia, such as Alzheimer's disease, or children with developmental disabilities, such as autism, who have wandered from safe environments. And it would also require the Attorney General to consult with the Secretary of Health and Human Services, blah, blah, blah. But it's not under the Health and Human Services Department. It's under the U.S. Attorney General and the Department of Justice. If you go and look at the language that is in this bill, it is very ambiguous. If you go look up what a developmental disability is, I mean, you're talking about things like bipolar disorder, ADD and ADHD are considered developmental disabilities, and you're gonna start getting into some serious gray areas on what that means. Now, right now, this bill is voluntary, But listen to Rep Gohmert, because he's the only person who apparently got up and said anything negative about this bill. And he said a lot. In fact, he said so much that even as I was listening to him talk, I thought, is this a real session of Congress?
Life here in Congress would be so much easier if I simply would not read the bills. This bill creates a program, a federal tracking program, and it starts with Alzheimer's patients, autism patients, but it also includes, according to the bill, developmental disabilities, and that's broad enough that you can start including all kinds of things now that the law has been passed. There is nothing anywhere in the law that prevents a parent from having something that helps that parent track or keep track of their autistic child or child with, according to this bill, developmental disabilities. Nothing. There's nothing that keeps a guardian from using some kind of tracking methodology to keep up with someone who has Alzheimer's.
And so there really is not that justification for creating this system. The only thing that happens by creating this system is that we now have a new level of Orwellian technological control over the people, and a whole bump to the police state and a whole new level.
Why wasn't this left then to the Department of Health and Human Services if it's really just a mental health issue? And the answer is, it was left to the Attorney General, to the Department of Justice, because truth is, if it needs to expand, that's where they want it to expand.
I mean, can you imagine a world where the police can decide who needs to have a microchip to be tracked? They claim in this bill, down here at the bottom, that there are limitations, and that the limitations are tracking data may not be used to create a federal database, but I don't know why anyone would trust that just because it says it, and secondly, that it's voluntary. Congressman Gohmert points out that would be very easy to change.
We were assured that this is strictly voluntary, but once you have a program in place, it's very easy for someone to file a petition and ask a judge, such as I once was back in Texas, here's the indications. We need an order for the good of this person, safety of the public, so that this person can be tracked. And it's not just danger to themselves. The bill talks about or caused by the patient, you know, injury that is caused by the patient or could be. And then, despite some of my friends in Congress saying, this is really not a danger, it's nothing to worry about, I get back to the office and my staff hands me an article. Well, now in Japan, they've come up with the best way of tracking people. It's by putting barcodes on fingers. All you need is a barcode on one finger, barcode on one toe, and then the Japanese government will be able to accurately and adequately track people they're concerned about. So I don't think anybody needs to be worried about the government having this Orwellian program, unless perhaps they're Christian, because the Civil Rights Commission thinks that people who talk about religious freedom, religious liberty, Christians that use words like evangelical, that those are the biggest threat, perhaps, for hate in America. Many in the Department of Homeland Security think the biggest threat for hate crimes, for destruction and death in America, are from people who are veterans, that may like the idea of the Second Amendment allowing them to keep guns.
Specifically when he's talking about veterans, that's because traumatic brain injury is on the list of developmental disabilities.
There are people who believe the Constitution should be literally followed. and the words that the Constitution actually says should be followed. I mean, the founders of this country would, of course, if they were around today, would be at the top of this administration's no-fly list. You believe the Constitution should be literally followed, or you believe that you should have a right to keep and bear arms under the Second Amendment, or you believe the Tenth Amendment says means what it says. Anybody that believes those kind of things is really a threat.
Did he really just get up and say all of that and have to get up and say that? Are we really to the point now in this country where a congressman is saying these kinds of things in front of Congress? And we are. That is the point that we're at.
Anybody that believes those kind of things is really a threat, according to some in this administration and some in what has become more of a permanent government. Administrations come and go, but we've got liberals that are so tolerant they want to take away the rights of anybody with whom they disagree. The blacklist experts, they talk about blacklists of the 50s, and they go beyond anything that the 50s may have had in store.
This has already had a roll call in the Senate.
My understanding, I was told that in the Senate, it was likewise breezed through. Somebody went on the Senate floor when other senators weren't there, maybe two people or so, and said, I ask unanimous consent that this bill be passed, hearing no objection, so ordered. Not much of a vote. We didn't even have a hearing in committee. Where we bring witnesses, talk to experts, talk to people involved, see what the problem is, see if the cure is worse than the problem. And we didn't have that. We didn't have constitutional experts talk about the indications for our future freedom.
I'm guessing this is just going to be one of those things that's quietly passed. There was really no objection to it. Gohmert got up there and said all those things, and that's all good and fine, but it was after it was passed.
There just was not enough attention paid to this bill, and it breaks my heart, and I'm not kidding, I'm not being sarcastic, and I'm afraid because of the bill's passage today, I'm sure the president will sign it into law. Gee, we get to track people we're concerned about in America. Maybe we'll use a barcode if we can have the Attorney General, in his opinion, find that a subcutaneous chip implant is non-invasive, then we could do that. But maybe the barcode would be better than a chip. But anyway, we've passed the program.
I really feel like we left the reservation a long time ago. You know how they use this vague language and they play these semantic games, and the little inch that the door is cracked open then gets kicked off the hinges. I just can't believe we're actually watching it happen.
One day they'll be remembered as the ones who quietly pushed this bill through that allowed a federal government to begin tracking for the first time. Perhaps someday we'll have a Congress before it's too late that will back up and say, wait a minute, we are not going to be funding with federal taxpayer dollars a tracking system for American citizens. I can guarantee you the program will ultimately be used to involuntarily place tracking information on people. So those things are coming. People need to be aware of them.
What the fuck?
Coming up, it's at the center of so many of our debates these days. There it is right there. It's the U.S. Constitution. Is it perhaps the problem and not the solution?
Yeah, listen here.
Get up, mister. Hey, what I say, sir, yeah. Get your hands in the air, sir. Woo. Yeah. Then you will get no hurt, mister. No, no, no.
Sound of the lawn, they never get no hurt now, now. You do what I say, son, boy, and do what made the laser say, son, boy. Put your sound in your head now, and you will.
That what I want, basically, what I really want is what you want. And I don't know what you want. Surprise me. But that's the kinship between I and thou. So when I ask, I go right down to the question, which we started with. What do I want? The answer is, I don't know. When Bodhidharma was asked, who are you? Which is another form of the same question. He said, I don't know. Planting flowers to which the butterflies come. Bodhidharma says, I know not. I don't know what I want. But when you don't know what you want, you've reached the state of desirelessness. When you really don't know. But you see, there's a beginning stage of not knowing and there's an ending stage of not knowing. In the beginning stage, you don't know what you want because you haven't thought about it. Or you've only thought superficially. And then when somebody forces you to think about it and go through and say, yeah, I think I'd like this, I think I'd like that, I think I'd like the other. That's the middle stage. Then you get beyond that. Say, is that what I really want? In the end you say, no, I don't think that's it. I might be satisfied with it for a while, and I wouldn't turn my nose up at it. But it's not really what I want. Why don't you really know what you want? Two reasons that you don't really know what you want. Number one, you have it. Number two, you don't know yourself. Because you never can. The Godhead is never an object of its own knowledge. Just as a knife doesn't cut itself, fire doesn't burn itself, light doesn't illumine itself. It's always an endless mystery to itself. I don't know. And this I don't know, uttered in the infinite interior of the spirit, this I don't know, is the same thing as I love, I let go, I don't try to force or control. It's the same thing as humility. And so the Upanishads say, if you think that you understand Brahman, you do not understand. And you have yet to be instructed further. If you know that you do not understand, then you truly understand. For the Brahman is unknown to those who know it, and known to those who know it not. And the principle is that any time you, as it were, voluntarily let up control, in other words, cease to cling to yourself, you have an access of power. Because you're wasting energy all the time in self-defense. Trying to manage things, trying to force things to conform to your will. The moment you stop doing that, that wasted energy is available. And therefore you are, in that sense, having that energy available, you are one with the divine principle. You have the energy. When you're trying, however, to act as if you were God, that is to say, you don't trust anybody and you're the dictator and you have to keep everybody in line, you lose the divine energy. Because what you're doing is simply defending yourself. So then, the principle is, the more you give it away, the more it comes back. Now you say, I don't have the courage to give it away. I'm afraid. And you can only overcome that by realizing, you better give it away because there's no way of holding on to it. The meaning of the fact, you see, that everything is dissolving constantly, that we're all falling apart, we're all in a process of constant death, and that the worldly hope men set their hearts upon turns ashes, or it prospers and like snow upon the desert's dusty face, lighting a little hour or two is gone, you know, all that Omar Khayyam jazz. You know, the cloud-capped towers, the gorgeous palaces, the great globe itself, I, all which it inherit, shall dissolve, and like this insubstantial pageant faded, leave not a rack behind. All falling apart. Everything is. That's the great assistance to you. See, that fact that everything is in decay is your helper. That is allowing you that you don't have to let go, because there's nothing to hold on to. It's achieved for you, in other words, by the process of nature. So once you see that you just don't have a prayer, and it's all washed up, and that you will vanish and leave not a rack behind, and you really get with that, suddenly you find you have the power, this enormous access of energy. But it's not power that came to you because you grabbed it. Came in entirely the opposite way. And power that comes to you in that opposite way is power with which you can be trusted.
My soul is not contained within the limits of my body. My body is contained within the limitlessness of my soul. I've often said that I wished people could realize all their dreams and wealth and fame, and so that they could see that it's not where you're going to find your sense of completion. I can tell you from experience, the effect you have on others is the most valuable currency there is. Because everything you gain in life will rot and fall apart, and all that will be left of you is what was in your heart. We're not the avatars we create. We're not the pictures on the film stock. We are the light that shines through. All else is just smoke and mirrors, distracting, but not truly compelling. Our eyes are not viewers. They are also projectors that are running a second story over the picture that we see in front of us all the time. Fear is writing that script. Now, fear is going to be a player in your life. But you get to decide how much. You can spend your whole life imagining ghosts, worrying about the pathway to the future, but all there will ever be is what's happening here, and the decisions we make in this moment, which are based in either love or fear. So many of us choose our path out of fear disguised as practicality. What we really want seems impossibly out of reach and ridiculous to expect, so we never dare to ask the universe for it. I'm saying that you can ask the universe for it. Life doesn't happen to you, it happens for you. As far as I can tell, it's just about letting the universe know what you want and working toward it while letting go of how it comes to pass. Why not take a chance on faith? Not religion, but faith. Not hope, but faith. I don't believe in hope. Hope is a beggar. Hope walks through the fire and faith leaps over it. You are ready and able to do beautiful things in this world. And after you walk through those doors today, you will only ever have two choices, love or fear. Choose love, and don't ever let fear turn you against your playful heart.
We are caught up in this idea that unless you're keeping tabs, unless your numbers are ahead of their numbers, or your position, or your social caste system is ahead, then you shouldn't be happy. But it's so stupid.
Yeah.
Like, you know what you need to happiness? Friends. Hang around with a bunch of friends.
Yeah.
Have a good time. Do stuff that you like. That's it. Be nice to each other. you'll get more friends.
Yeah.
Be nice to those friends. They'll be loyal to you. You'll be loyal to them, your brothers and sisters. You stay together forever. Everybody's cool. It's all you have to do. You find a gang of friends. You collect friends that are cool, and you enforce your love for them, and they enforce their love for you, and you shield yourself from the outside world by forming these pockets and communities of awesome people. That can be done.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
This ladder stayed in the house yesterday. This ladder stayed outside. Right off the bat, this ladder looks better than this ladder. That's how we view people. We don't take into consideration that this poor bastard stayed outside all night in the cold and the rain and all the other shit. And sometimes all you need in life is a little bit of help. So y'all don't be too quick to judge. We all go through shit. Be there for somebody sometimes. They may need you, and by God, you may need them. Y'all be cool. Stay classy. I love you.
Now, go find the others.com.
Don't blow it. Keep it simple. Count your money.